This is Rabbi Josh Yoder of the Stanton Street Shul. Thank you for downloading this class podcast. These classes are provided free of charge through the generosity of the Stanton Street Shul community and supporters like you. If you do enjoy them, please consider making a donation to our synagogue's building fund on our website's shop donate page at www.stantonstshul.com.
Good morning. It is Sunday, December 29th, 2013, doing part two of Rambam Silchot Shabbat, chapter three, where we last left off, with the first part of the chapter. We were discussing some of the rules of cooking on Shabbat, not to say that you are permitted to cook on Shabbat, but setting stuff up before Shabbat such that it does continue to cook on Shabbat. Technically speaking, we saw it is permissible, but there are a whole bunch of rabbinic laws set in place. Why? There was a concern you might come to actually cook on Shabbat if you just let food go. There's some people who like messing with their food a lot. I didn't mention this. Anyone here caramelize onions? I only recently learned how to do this. So apparently one of the tricks to caramelizing onions is you just let it sit. Like, the more that you stir it, the more you mess with it, the less likely it caramelizes, or the longer it takes. There's some people who just like messing around with food and just never, like, whether or not it needs it, they just like fidgeting with it. So whether or not that helps your cooking is one thing. It is, however, very problematic when it comes to the laws of Shabbat. So we gave a couple of descriptions about certain things and ways of perhaps adjusting for it, such as covering the coals or removing the heat source, of putting something in place that would remind you in some way or would prevent you from actually adjusting the heat. Yesterday we even discussed about messing with the food itself, like not inserting a ladle while it's still on the heat source, because that would consider like you're hastening the food process. We discussed the issue of chazarah, returning the food to the heat source. Again, one of those decrees that was enacted, lest you come to actually cook the thing. All right? So you have all of these come under the rabbinic category. It can get complicated, especially when you get to the details, but understand these were all placed simply to prevent people from violating the prohibitions of cooking on Shabbat. Relevant to the last ones here, one of the things that we mentioned was when you set up food to cook on Shabbat, one of the criteria that Rambam mentioned was how much the food needs to be cooked. We said that if it is completely cooked, such that additional cooking will make it worse, you're allowed to leave it, because you're not going to do anything to make it better, because it's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. And if it is completely raw, then you're allowed to let it go, because you're not going to mess with it, because it takes so long to cook. But if it's somewhere between that stage, where it's good enough, right, where it could be eaten in some way, but cooking it is going to get better, then you can't leave it in that state before Shabbat, because there's a much greater likelihood that you're going to come and mess with either the food itself or with the heat source to enable the food to be optimal by the time you get around to eat it. All right? Very quick summary of the first part. Start us off, we're up to, I believe, Halacha 12.
A person should not fill a pot with peas or beans or a jug of water and place them in an oven on Friday before nightfall and leave them to cook. Even when the above and other foods like them were not cooked at all, they are considered to be food that was not completely cooked because they do not require a substantial amount of time to cook. Therefore, the person will continue to pay attention to them and intends to partake of them immediately. Accordingly, it is forbidden to leave them in an oven unless they are completely cooked. If one transgressed and left them in an oven, it is forbidden to partake of them until Saturday night.
So we actually did this last week, but since the next few halachot are related to this, it's good for review. One of the things Rambam mentioned is, you know, let's say you have a chulent pot, you can throw in a raw piece of meat right before Shabbat, even if the rest is like in a better state, you're not going to eat a chulent with a honking piece of raw meat in there, all right? However, Rambam says that only applies to things that aren't easily cooked. So if you have things like, you know, peas or barley, like the bean part, and we even mentioned last week, like, whether or not you're referring to, like, one versus a whole bunch of them. Things that are going to be cooked very quickly don't count, because they're going to get brought up to that state of being fully cooked really quickly, and your mind is still going to be paid attention to it, as opposed to, like, the whole point of the rawness, why that works is you're not going to worry about messing with raw food. But when you know it's going to get cooked quickly, it's not going to be raw for that much. right? Now, I don't know how long it takes to cook any of this stuff, but if it does take that quickly, you lose whatever benefit you have by putting in something raw. And we also discussed last week about that whole Kadeshi Ya'asu, about waiting the period of time after Shabbat, such that you will not say that you post facto derived benefit from accidental transgression on Shabbat, by partaking of it within that small time. Because if you wait the amount of time after Shabbat, since you could have, if you would have done it after Shabbat, it would have gotten you to that same point. You didn't save yourself any time. Therefore, that's the time period we let you wait. All right?
Okay.
And he continues along those lines with Halacha 13.
The following rules apply when meat was placed in an oven before nightfall and left to roast on the Sabbath. If the meat is from a kid or it is other tender flesh, it is permitted. Such meat requires only the warmth of the fire itself, and if one stirs the coals, the meat will char. If the meat is from a goat or an ox, it is forbidden, lest he stir the coals to cause it to cook faster. If, however, one sealed the opening of the oven closed with clay, roasting even the latter meats is permitted, for if one opens the oven to stir the coals, the wind will enter and cause the meat to harden and spoil. The oven will cool suddenly, and the meat will spoil.
Okay. So here, he even makes a distinction between different types of meats, right? Because for people who know how to cook better than I do, meats cook at different rates, I suppose, depending on what cut they are.
Ox is kosher?
Can be, I believe. I don't know. I guess it might depend on certain types of species, too. Well, so this is actually somewhat unrelated. But since you brought it up, when it comes to the animals and the words that are mentioned in like halacha, like yes, usually that's how it's translated. Is you've got the split hooves, choose its cud.
Right.
Those are the main things. And assuming you shecht it properly, it could be completely fine. There was a place in the city used to be able to get kosher venison, not that common
right. Because
there wasn't so much of a market for it, but it still could be kosher in theory. Where you might get some type of issues is when one word is used, which species today does that really apply to?
Right.
And there are people who actually spend a lot of time on this. Like I found in, if I remember correctly, Yoridea Simon 28, the word buffalo. And I was like, how did they have buffalo in, Tzfat? Like that seems weird. And I actually asked the man and said, well, there are actually different types of buffalo. Like there's an Asian buffalo and there's an American buffalo.
Okay.
Whatever.
Right.
That's not really the point here.
Okay.
The point here is, one, even meat can cook at different paces.
Right.
Two, sealing. Either of you cook using a pressure cooker?
No.
Right? So the argument seems to be, like, apparently the way that you cook in a pressure cooker is the thing's got to be sealed tight. Otherwise, you don't have the pressure. Right? Makes sense?
Mm.
So when you have something like that, or you're cooking it in such a way where... in this case, he's using you're closing the opening of the oven with clay. Then you're okay because if you open it to stir the coals, you're going to ruin everything, right? The way that you're cooking it is set up in such a way. I mean, you could also argue that if you put clay on the oven thing, that would be enough to deter you because, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't open up and do anything. But you're also cooking in such a way that discourages you from messing with anything. Like
right. When
you are cooking in a pressure cooker, you're not supposed to open it up and stir. You're supposed to leave it. That's the whole point of cooking using a pressure cooker. Same analogy, even though I don't think he was talking about specifically a pressure cooker here, I think works. More people cook with pressure cookers today than otherwise. Right? So then it doesn't matter even what type of meat you're putting in there, because the whole point is you're not going to come to mess around with the, either stirring the pot or to mess with the heat source. Halacha 14, similarly, whenever something would be spoiled by the wind, we do not decree against it being heated, because someone might open the oven and stir the coals. For this reason, we may place strands of flax into an oven to bleach before nightfall, for if one opens the night, they will spoil. Sorry about that. All right, so again, you can do things that would preclude you from doing something that would lead you to violate Shabbat, and then those rabbinic laws would not come into effect. All right, continue with 15.
If one placed an entire kid into an oven, the situation is governed by the laws applying to meat from a goat or an ox, and it is forbidden, lest one stir coals, lest one seals the oven closed. If the 14th of Nisan falls on Friday, it is, however, permitted to hang the Paschal lamb into an oven.
Paschal. I'll explain that in a second. Paschal. Yeah.
Lamb into an oven directly before nightfall, even though it is not sealed closed.
Okay. Yeah, the members have to be careful. So what's the deal here? The footnote explains in footnote 54, when the body of an animal or fowl is intact, the meat is not exposed to the heat of the fire on both sides. Therefore, the cooking process is slower, and there is reason to suspect that one will stir the coals. Right? Mm-hmm. Presumably, like you've noticed, when you know people roast the animals on the spit, they rotate the stick.
Right.
Why? So that it gets cooked evenly. Yeah. You probably have all seen rotisserie chicken. Why do you have rotisserie chicken? So that it gets cooked on all sides, right? Problem is, doing it, you know, right before Shabbat is a problem. The issue with the, you know, the Paschal lamb, is what in Hebrew called the Korban Pesach, is when you have to eat the whole lamb on night of Passover. The laws of Gemara and Pesachim is a whole bunch of rules and restrictions about that. So that's a bit of an exception, right? Even though... because, well, basically Pesach is an exception because you have a biblical commandment about how you're supposed to eat the thing. And basically the people who are partaking of it have to be careful. When it says here the people, it says here, b'nei chavuraz rizimhein, right? The people of the group, when the Korban Pesach was eaten, you really didn't have one person have a lamb per person. That's a bit excessive. What you had was people got together in a group called a chabura. They all contributed something. They all got the lamb, and they all brought it together, and then they would all eat it together as one unit. So you didn't really do it solo. You did it in a group. So let's say you did it with five other people, right? So five other people know, hey, we're not supposed to mess with it. They're going to be a lot more careful than if you're just doing it at home. All right.
Okay.
16.
Meat, onions, or eggs should not be roasted over an open fire unless they can be roasted before nightfall to the point where they are fit to be eaten. If they are roasted to this extent before the commencement of the Sabbath, it is permissible to leave them on the fire on the Sabbath to be roasted further. The rationale is that increased heat will impair their taste. Since they are being cooked over a fire, if one stirs the coals, they will char. For this reason, we are allowed to leave incense under clothes before nightfall to perfume them. For if one stirs the coals, the incense will burn and the clothes will be damaged by the smoke.
Right. So, again, another detail which we don't need to spend too much time on because, I mean, in terms, again, the issue about depending on how you're roasting is your concern is if you're going to increase it, like that if you're going to stir the coals, then it's going to make things worse. So if that's your case, we're not worried about it. Rambam continues in 17, from the above, we can conclude that all the prohibitions mentioned in this context were not enacted because the cooking was completed on the Sabbath. Instead, they are rabbinic decrees enacted, lest one stir the coals. Accordingly, wool should not be placed in a vat to dye unless it was removed from the fire, lest one stir the coals. Similarly, the vat should be sealed, closed with clay, lest one stir the dye after nightfall. So this logic applies to a whole lot of other things too. It's not that you're waiting, it's not that the problem, as Rambam introduced the chapter, the problem is not with setting up something before Shabbat such that a melacha, an action that is prohibited on Shabbat, be completed on Shabbat. The problem is, what is the likelihood that you're going to do something in order to hasten it or make this process better such that you would wind up violating the biblical prohibition on Shabbat itself? All right? And take, I think this might even be the last one. No. Yeah, no, there's another page. So 18.
We should not place bread in an oven directly before nightfall, nor should we place a cake on coals unless there is time for the surface attached to the oven or the side of the cake facing the fire to crust. Should this be done, it is permissible to leave it to continue baking afterwards, for if one stirs the coals, one will spoil the bread. The following rules apply when one places bread in an oven. Before nightfall, and there is not sufficient time for its surface to crust before nightfall. If one did so with a deliberate intent to violate the above ruling, it is forbidden to partake of the bread until Saturday night, after sufficient time for it to bake has passed. If one did so unknowingly, it is permitted to remove the bread for the three Shabbat meals. When one removes the bread, one should not remove it using a baker's peel as one does during the week. Instead, one should use a knife or other similar utensil.
All right, so this requires a bit of explanation here. Because it seems, I mean, there's a footnote, we'll have to rely on the footnotes here, as he does a very good job of explaining this. One, the way that they used to bake bread was really by throwing the dough on the side of an oven. Right? It's not like today we just put it in, you know, flat and straight. There seems to be a different rule regarding baking bread before Shabbat and how that works. According to the footnote here, he says, this resembles the ruling of Halacha 9 regarding food that was left to cook over a fire. So let's turn back to 9. Do you remember what he said about that? Because of the way that it's cooked. It says, the following rules apply when a person left food on a fire in a situation where he's prohibited against doing so. If he transgressed and he left the food cooking intentionally, he's prohibited to eat until Saturday night and must wait enough time passes for it to have cooked. He forgot to remove it from the fire on Friday. The greater leniency is allowed, etc., etc. Right? So what makes bread different? And there seem to be a few other different rules here. So one is you need to have it cooked at least sufficient time, like where you're not going to mess with it because additional messing with the fire is going to make it worse. He also has an exception here where if he did so unknowingly, it's permitted to remove the bread for the three Sabbath meals, footnote 65. Here the ruling is far more lenient than the ruling in Halacha 9 regarding food. The commentaries explain that the fundamental element of all meals is bread, and if the person does not have bread, he will not be able to fulfill the mitzvah of eating the three Sabbath meals. From this, one can postulate that if a person has no food other than that which has been left on a fire on the Sabbath, he is allowed to partake of that food so that he will not be required to fast on the Sabbath. That sort of takes it a few steps down of, like, what happens if you're completely and totally stuck. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, do either one of you bake bread? No? Okay, then. Let's move on.
A person may make a fire for any substance he desires, regardless of whether he kindles it on the ground or in a torch holder. When he lights it before nightfall, he may use its light or warm himself from it on the Sabbath. He must, however, kindle the majority of the fire before nightfall to the extent that the flame rises up on its own accord. If he did not kindle the majority of the fire, it is forbidden for him to benefit from it on the Sabbath, lest he stir or move the wood so the flame rises up. If he desires to burn a single piece of wood, he must kindle the majority of its thickness and the majority of its circumference before nightfall.
Right, so here the concern is, like, let's say you're just doing a reading light, like a candle, right? So that's very simple. You just light a wick and it's good to go. But let's say you need, like, a real heat source, like
a bonfire,
let's say a fireplace, right? So when you light a fireplace for heat, you know, you're going to need it at a certain point such that you won't mess with it. Because people like messing with fire, right, but when it comes to bonfires and fireplaces. So Ram says here's the majority has to be done before Shabbat, lest you come to stoke it, you know, overall. When does the above apply? Outside the temple premises. But in the temple, it is permissible to light a fire in the chamber of the hearth directly before nightfall. We do not suspect that anyone will stir the coals, for the priests are careful. Again, not so much relevant now, but the same concern is there. Take 21.
If a fire was made of reeds or of seeds, it is not necessary for the majority of it to be kindled before Shabbat. Instead, since it is caught fire before the commencement of the Sabbath, its use is permitted, for the fire will spread quickly through these substances, and there is no necessity for one to stir it. Therefore, if the reeds were bound together or seeds were placed in palm baskets, the same laws applying to wood apply, and the flames must be powerful enough to rise up on their own accord before the commencement of the Sabbath.
All right, so you could think about it this way. Like, if you're just burning, say, newspapers, those burn pretty quickly. You're not going to mess with burning newspapers. You're burning, like, large things of wood, then you might have an issue. So the fuel source matters. All right, I actually even remember there was a tailgate barbecue that was heated with newspapers. We were, like, looking at it, why it was the best thing ever, like, they're newspapers. They burn out really, really fast. You can't really cook much on it.
And they're also pretty toxic.
Well, yeah, well, they were actually selling that as, oh, well, you know, since newspapers are made from paper, you get that natural, earthy flavor with it.
Yeah, the ink is...
Yeah, whatever. These are details. Look, you know, someone who's, you know, having barbecue, tailgating at a football game, probably not that concerned with their health.
Yeah.
All right. And last one.
When a fire is fueled with tar, sulfur, oily substances, wax, straw, or stubble, it is not required that the majority be kindled before the commencement of Shabbat, because these substances catch fire quickly.
Okay. So this concludes the chapter, and we conclude with the exact same thing of the concern is that you're going to stoke the coals and the heat source on Shabbat. Okay? Now, when you do things that would, again, preclude it, or where there's not a problem, you don't have a problem. So if you're cooking stuff that burn, if you're using heat sources that cook very quickly, well then okay. Now, you could argue, well, at least this is in terms of letting the fire go, as opposed to cooking stuff over it. And again, all of those things get combined together. Meaning if something gets cooked, how to put this? Let's do a quick recap here. We're talking about you're setting up something to complete doing a malacha over Shabbat. Mm-hmm. There are lots of ways or lots of areas that based on what you're doing, you might come to actually violate Shabbat. So fire and cooking are two big things. Main concerns are one, messing around with the fire itself, and two, messing around with the food. Okay? You can solve the problem in either case. Right? If your main goal is for cooking, then we're concerned both with the fire and with the food, but you can solve the problem by taking care of one of those two things, and in part. Sometimes you need issues with both, meaning take care of the fire part and take care of the food part. If you're just using it for heat or for light, clearly we're not worried about food, so then our only concern is the heat source. Right? Because even if you have a heat source, but you still might come to stir the food on Shabbat, that could still be problematic. Because you're still cooking, even though the heat source isn't the problem. Because there are real two prohibitions at play here. One is a prohibition of havara, of actual lighting fires, and the other is of bishul, of cooking. Now, even though you do bishul over a fire, they're still separate actions, right? Because if you have a fire that existed before Shabbat, you're not allowed to take food, like raw cold food, and put it over a fire to have it cook on Shabbat. Even though you didn't light the fire, you're still using advantages of that fire specifically to cook food. That is a problem, and you can't do that, right? But otherwise, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with starting something before Shabbat to let it continue on Shabbat. There are just rabbinic decrees put in place that would try to prevent you from actually violating Shabbat proper if you do so. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll stop here because this is... Well, we don't have to... No, it's a great question, which we'll play again. Because if the issue is, what if you take other precautions and not these? Do you still have to go through all of these? And that is it's a wonderful question that actually gets a little bit more into how Jewish law works. And what is your approach to these things? You have, normally, when you have a rabbinic decree, you have to do that... what that rabbinic decree says, or don't do what it tells you not to do, regardless of the reason. That's certainly at least the opinion of Maimonides. Other people are comically inconsistent in terms of when the reason doesn't apply, does the law not apply either. Now, what we've already seen in this chapter is that there are some conditions where if they are met, you don't have a problem. Right? Because, for one reason or another, just, you've already taken some precautions, so you don't need to worry about others. Right? Like chazara, right? Returning something. Well, if you still hold on to it, you're okay. Right? So what difference does that make as opposed to putting it down, all that sort of thing? So, in terms of to what extent can you extrapolate, well, I'm going to do this protection instead of that protection. Does that work? That's going to depend a lot on your approach to Jewish law. Rambam here has listed a bunch of exceptions, where if you do it this way, then it's okay. You do it that way, it's okay. Leaving food that's completely raw, that's okay, because we're not concerned about it. So then you can. Leaving food that's completely cooked, well, that's okay. Somewhere in the middle is not okay. Right? So there, your precaution, you can say that the precaution was only enacted in specific cases. Right? Therefore, you're not actually violating the rabbinic decree because your conditions aren't what the sages actually decreed you should avoid.
Right.
But it's not something I would necessarily go and play games with either. Today, when people do cooking and people do reheating, you can argue, if I set my thing on a timer, it's not going to be an issue. you know, if you have like our modern day ovens, some even have like a Shabbos mode, right? That kind of do some of that where you know that you're not going to, you know, mess with the dials at all.
Right.
There are, and people, I think you could have a plausible argument, but they would have to be done on a case by case basis. And a lot is going to be conditional on how do you approach Jewish law, where if it's, you know, and how did the sages set this up? Right, because if you can find other exceptions, you could argue, well, this was the reason for the sages' problem, for the sages to enact their decree. I've solved that problem through another means, therefore the decree is no longer relevant. That would be one approach. Another approach would be, it doesn't matter what technical solutions you have, the prohibitions of the sages would still be in place. And these would be areas of detail that you're going to have a great deal of dispute on. And the reason why, at least in this shiur, I'm not giving specific piskei halacha about what I think is, no matter what I would say, someone is going to disagree. And ask, like, I can tell you, someone's going to be lenient, someone's going to be strict. And that's just how it's going to be. It just needs to, you know, kind of make sense. Shabbos mode, you know, is done to solve some of those problems. Or you put food in the oven while it's still cold. And then the oven goes on, it's going to get heat up. Or a hot tray that's on a timer.
Right.
All those sorts of things that didn't really exist.
Right.
Not to mention, like, if you've got a hot tray that has only an on or off setting, doesn't really, like, there's no way for you to adjust the temperature.
Right.
We got one of those over here,
yeah.
Right? You plug it in, it's on.
Yeah.
I think my mom had one that actually had a knob, but, like, what does that mean?
Right.
It's like, you're not going to come to, like, adjust the heat source when you physically can't. And that's even assuming electricity counts as heat, whatever.
Right.
So those are fantastic questions that you're asking that will be the source of endless debate.
Okay.
And there are, you know, not to say that there aren't solutions and there aren't opinions out there to be lenient, Shabbos mode being of an oven being a really great example. But yeah, I'm just not going to touch most of those questions now.
Okay.
All right. So next week we continue with chapter 4 and have a wonderful week.